Chapter 15. Joe frowned.
Maybe it's just that junk they shot me full of, but that makes no sense at all to me.
I can't tell you what it means,
Lorna Friel responded.
That was all the man said.
Through the mill?
Frank repeated.
And he said it was north of here?
That's right,
the actress said.
I didn't understand, but I was in no position to ask any questions.
I may have it,
Frank said, turning to Joe.
Remember Green Gage Textiles?
Sure. There was a time when half the north side of town worked for them,
Joe said.
Then the company closed its plant. That was a long time ago. We were just little kids.
So little that you forget what people used to call the plant. Green Gage Mills.
Joe's eyebrows rose.
It's worth checking out.
But first we have some business here that needs our attention.
The Iola Morton clone was still unconscious. Frank walked over to her and knelt down. He pinched her mouth open, then reached inside.
She has a false tooth too,
he said.
Is anything about her real?
Joe muttered, glaring down at the woman, yet feeling guilty. It was a weird situation, having a deadly enemy who looked just like someone you loved. But then, this whole night had been a succession of weird and frightening situations.
I'd say this was real.
Frank delicately removed a small white object from the woman's mouth, then shook a tiny capsule into his palm.
Real poison.
Best description of her I've ever heard,
Joe said. He tried to fight off a yawn, but it overcame him and he stretched.
Guess I'm coming back to reality,
he said sheepishly.
Every part of my body hurts, and I'm exhausted.
Frank's expression was concerned as he turned to his brother.
You sure you're okay?
That got a laugh out of Joe.
I feel about as good as you look.
Frank ran a hand through his matted dark hair, wincing as he did so.
I see what you mean,
he admitted.
Neither of us is in much shape to launch a rescue mission.
But it has to be us,
Joe said grimly.
The police aren't going to listen to what we say. Not after I reported Mom's death.
He quickly told Frank what had happened. Lorna Fria looked even more guilty.
If there's anything I can do to help.
Maybe there is,
Frank said.
Let's just finish up here.
They used the rope that had bound the actress to restrain and gag the false Iola, or rather, Marjeet, as the now dead guard had called her. Then Frank searched his brother's clothes inch by inch until he found what he'd been looking for. It was a tiny construction, about the size of a straight pin, with a slightly larger glassy bulb at one end.
Going to stomp on it?
Joe asked. Frank shook his head and slipped the pinpoint into one of the gauzy layers of the phony Iola's dress.
We are going to leave this right here, so the other assassins will think this is where you are.
Then he picked up the body of the Iola clone and carried it into the mausoleum. When Frank returned, he handed Joe the guard's gun.
I guess we're ready,
he said.
Let's take the van. We can come back for Callie's car later.
They piled into the van, Frank at the wheel, Joe in the passenger seat, and Lorna in the back. They glided through the silent late-night streets. Joe glanced at his watch. 5 o'clock.
The dead of night.
Just the time to be leaving a graveyard. Frank drove toward the northern end of town. Most of the houses were old and not well kept. Development had been slow to come to the north side. Two other abandoned mills in another part of town had been turned into expensive condominiums. But the biggest mill, Green Gage, hadn't been renovated. It was part of a deserted industrial area, its red brick walls gaunt and worn.
Lovely place,
Joe said, staring out his window as they drove up to it.
It looks like a standing advertisement on the dangers of industrialization.
Well, this is what these places look like before the developers make them quaint,
Frank said, stopping the van on the road.
It could be pretty, I suppose,
Joe conceded.
Look, the place even has a water wheel and its own stream.
Where convenient prisoners can be disposed of,
Frank said grimly.
I get it,
Joe said.
Sent through the mill.
His eyes suddenly narrowed. The windows of the mill had been painted over, but Joe thought he saw light at the corner of a small basement window by the water wheel.
Am I crazy, or is that a light?
Frank looked in the direction Joe was pointing.
Definitely a light,
Frank said.
They must be down there.
I think you're right,
Joe said.
Let's work out a plan.
A very nervous Lorna Friel sat in the back of the van, listening as the boys developed their plan of attack. She grew more nervous when they explained her part in it.
"You're sure I won't get in trouble for doing this?"
she said worriedly when they drove off. Frank pulled the van up by a payphone in front of an all-night diner.
"You'll be telling the truth about the mill, as far as it goes. Somebody is living in it illegally."
Joe nodded.
"And after we get back there, the cops will be sure to find a loud and dangerous party in progress."
"I don't know,"
Lorna said. Joe turned to her.
"You said you'd like to help us. Well, this is the help we need. We can't go to the police with a report of what's really going on. They'd either think we were kidding, or they'd lock us in padded cells."
"Either way, we won't be able to help the people being held in the mill,"
Frank said.
"But if you call as a worried housewife, the police will respond, and we'll get the backup we need."
Joe smiled at her.
"Think of it as an acting job,"
the actress said. They dropped her off with lots of change.
"Give us 5 minutes, then call the cops,"
Joe said.
"You can stay in the diner until things settle down."
They drove back to the mill through a pre-dawn haze.
"Halloween is almost over,"
Frank said, looking up at the slightly brightening sky. Joe's face was grim as he checked over the gun that had belonged to the assassin.
"Let's hope we don't have to deal with any more ghosts."
Frank pulled off the road a short distance past the mill. They headed for the main gate.
"Old gate, old paint, but a new chain and lock,"
Frank said.
"A loose chain,"
Joe said, stretching the links to their limit between the two door halves.
"A person can, ouch, squeeze through."
They went across a silent and overgrown loading area, climbed up on the old loading dock, and found that one of the sealed metal shutters had been cut through.
"Welder's torch,"
Frank said, fingering the twisted end of the shutter.
"Whoever got in here wasn't fooling around."
"We knew that about them from the beginning,"
Joe muttered as they crept into the building. Sneaking through echoing galleries where huge machines once had stood, they searched for a way to the basement. Following a barely noticeable glimmer of light, Joe found a stairway. Halfway down, the stairwell was masked by a ragged blanket, hiding the flickering glow of lamplight below. Quietly, Joe stepped to the blanket and twitched it aside for a quick peek. The basement was a dirty place. Rows of low, thick pillars divided the huge basement into compartments.
"I guess they need all those pillars to support the weight of the machinery upstairs,"
Frank whispered.
"But they make our job tougher. If we're right and everyone is down here, the assassins would have had to split them up into different compartments. We'll have to move fast to get them all."
"Then we'll move fast,"
Joe said.
"Let's check some things out first,"
Frank said.
"If someone's lying in wait for us, it's better if we separate."
Joe nodded in agreement. He held the curtain aside, and Frank slipped past. The first compartment was empty, but sticking out from the next compartment, Frank could see a pair of legs in black jeans with ropes around the ankles.
"Callie,"
Frank thought excitedly. He pulled out his knife and silently crept forward. A few minutes later, Frank reported back to Joe.
"Callie's safe,"
he whispered, his voice expressing his relief.
"They must have brought her back after I escaped, figuring they could use her to make me think I was seeing ghosts. I cut her free, but I told her to stay there until we located everyone. The gray man is two compartments away. I slipped the knife to him."
"What about guards?"
Joe asked.
"I heard someone moving around at the far end of the basement,"
Frank said.
"So I know there's at least one. But there are so many pillars, I couldn't tell if there are any more guards or not."
"I'm coming with you to check it out,"
Joe said.
"Okay,"
Frank said.
"Follow me."
As the boys crept down an aisle created by the pillars, a familiar figure in a trench coat appeared in front of them.
"Loose already?"
Joe whispered. Frank pointed to the nasty set of scratches across the gray man's face.
"That's the cheap imitation. I did that to him."
The phony government man pulled out a gun, and Frank and Joe dived behind one of the wide pillars. The gunshot rang out deafeningly in the basement. Then came a yell, followed by a muffled call of,
"All clear."
It was the gray man's voice, but in the cavernous basement the voice was muted, and even Frank couldn't be sure which gray man was speaking. The Hardys looked at each other.
"Cover me,"
Joe whispered. Just then, Another shot rang out. Joe raced from one pillar to the next, looking for the two gray men. Frank remained behind another pillar, watching Joe's movements, prepared to fire off a warning shot to keep any guards from advancing. Joe crept into a compartment and found two gray men, one on the ground, apparently dead, the other standing over him, gun in hand. The gun-toter turned to Joe. He had a bruise on his face, but no scratches.
"Good to see you,"
the gray man said, leaving his clone lying on the floor. He dashed into the next compartment. Someone fired at him, but the bullet hit a pillar. Joe joined the agent, followed by Frank. They found the gray man cutting their mother loose. Frank stood guard until his mother was free.
"One more prisoner, two more terrorists,"
the gray man said.
"A blonde girl and a man they remade to look like Al Rasasa. They've been at the far end making plans, but now they have a problem. They can't get past us, and the stairway at the end has fallen to rubble. So they're trapped."
"But they have a hostage,"
Joe said grimly.
"Vanessa!"
"Listen!"
A slightly accented man's voice came from the far end of the basement.
"We have guns and the girl! You let us go or she dies!"
"She dies? You never get out of here alive!"
Joe shouted back.
"I'll burn this place over you if I have to!
You don't dare!"
The Al Rasasa clone sneered.
"You got the voice right,"
Joe called.
"Too bad you couldn't get the brain, too."
"We are coming out, the girl first. If you shoot, I will shoot her,"
the terrorist yelled. A very frightened-looking Vanessa Bender appeared in the narrow aisle. She was unbound, but the Al Rasasa clone's pistol was pointed at her head.
"All of you, out of that compartment,"
he screamed.
"And throw down your guns."
Joe came out into the aisle first. He knew if they surrendered, they were dead. He also knew that he wasn't a good enough shot to hit the terrorist without endangering Vanessa. "I hope I'm doing the right thing," he thought. He threw down his gun, sending it skittering across the stone floor. The imitation Al Rasasa turned his attention to the sound for a fraction of a second, and the gray man fired. With a horrible cry, the terrorist flew backward. He had been hit in the shoulder. Vanessa grabbed for his gun as he fell. A slim female arm came from behind the pillar and dragged Vanessa back into a compartment. Joe turned to Frank.
"You take care of Mom and Callie. I'll handle this."
Joe raced toward the last compartment. There, he found two girls struggling on the floor. Both had ash blonde hair, and both wore almost identical clothes. Both held guns in their right hands while gripping the wrist of their opponent's gun hand with their left. When they saw Joe, both cried,
"Help me get her!"
How could he tell which was the girl he knew and which was the trained killer? There's only one way to prove this, he thought.
"You'll have to shoot me first,"
Joe said. End of chapter.